WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
At the height of his career in 1938, the great racehorse Seabiscuit was the year's number one newsmaker, ahead of Franklin Roosevelt by several lengths. A new biography by Laura Hillenbrand called Seabiscuit, an American Legend, reminds us of why all of America in the 1930s seemed to be suffering from horse fever. Book critic Maureen Corrigan has a review.
If anyone had told me a couple of weeks ago that I would be raving today about a biography of a horse, I'd have snorted a resounding nay. But that's yet another wondrous thing about books. When they're good, they lift you out beyond the well-worn grooves of your own tastes and curiosities. Seabiscuit by Laura Hillenbrand does for the world of horse racing what Into Thin Air did for mountain climbing, and The Perfect Storm did for, what was it, swordfish fishing? In daredevil prose that sprints along at a breakneck pace, Hillenbrand tells the incredible tale of Seabiscuit, who many believe to be the greatest racehorse of all time. Seabiscuit tore up the track for 5 years during the late 1930s into 1940. His story, and the story of the down-and-out men who joined together to uncover his championship potential, is an inspiring, extreme adventure tale of physical courage and moral grit. A tale that unfolded during a period when the whole country was living out an extreme adventure of its own, called the Great Depression. Seabiscuit, as Hillenbrand describes him, and as even a city slicker like me can tell from the many black and white photos in her book, was one sad sack of a horse. Runty and square, he had what Hillenbrand calls baseball glove knees that didn't quite straighten all the way. Sleeping and overeating were his favorite pastimes. When galloping, he often whacked himself in the ankle with his own hind foot. That was Seabiscuit as a 3-year-old colt before the supernaturally gifted trainer, Tom Smith, began working with him. Smith had learned his enigmatic way with ponies out on the vanishing western frontier, and he was famous for being a man of few words. Tom Smith, wrote one reporter, says almost nothing, constantly. Smith was 60 years old and living in a horse stall in a crummy Mexican racetrack when a man named Charles Howard hired him as a horse buyer. Howard had made a fluke fortune selling cars in San Francisco, but after the death of one of his sons, the grief-stricken Howard began frittering away his time at racetracks, where he met Smith. Smith, in turn, met Seabiscuit when the bargain basement colt and the mute trainer looked each other straight in the eye at a fairgrounds in Detroit, and both nodded. In an astounding roll of the dice, Seabiscuit's future jockey, Red Pollard, showed up penniless at those same fairgrounds just when Smith was ruminating on the choice of a jockey for the strange little horse he'd just bought. Pollard, statistically speaking, was one of the losingest riders in racehorse history. But Smith remembered some talent he'd once shown. The chemistry among these three washed-up men and the ultimate dark horse would become the stuff that dreams are made of. Like a brilliant jockey, Hillenbrand suspensefully manages her champion of a story. In the final stretch, the book hurtles towards its climax, the race of the century between Seabiscuit and the far and away favorite, War Admiral, on November 1st, 1938, at Pimlico. But before that race, there are fascinating and teasing narrative digressions. We hear about how the notorious Tijuana racetrack was destroyed by a moving mountain of horse manure, how the growth of radio spurred Seabiscuit's career, and how jockeys in the 1920s and 30s sweated, laxatived, and tapeworm themselves into thinness, only to find themselves broke and fired when almost inevitably they were crippled by riding. But back to the race of the century. Seabiscuit's jockey that fateful day was George Wolfe, subbing for a disabled Pollard. Tens of thousands of people were at the track. Everyone else in America was listening to the radio. Here, to give you a faint sense of how thrillingly Hillenbrand writes, is the pivotal moment at the end of that nose-to-nose race. Wolf glanced at War Admiral's beautiful head, sweeping through the air like a sickle. He could see the depth of the Colt's effort in his large amber eye, rimmed in crimson and white. An instant later, Wolf felt a subtle hesitation in his opponent, a wavering. He looked at War Admiral again. The Colt's tongue shot out the side of his mouth. Seabiscuit had broken him. Wolf dropped low over the saddle and called into Seabiscuit's ear, asking him for everything he had. Seabiscuit gave it to him. War Admiral tried to answer, clinging to Seabiscuit for a few strides, but it was no use. He slid from Seabiscuit's side as if gravity were pulling him backward. It's always a toss-up in reviewing books whether or not to get into an author's life. A book should stand or fall on its own merits. Seabiscuit certainly does. So I'm not trying to give the book a boost by telling you that author Laura Hillenbrand was pretty much confined to her house by chronic disease all the years she was researching and writing her book. For me, knowing about her disease helps account for the dazzling energy of her race descriptions. In the pages where Hillenbrand describes Seabiscuit rocketing along at top speed, both she and her readers fly.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Seabiscuit, An American Legend by Laura Hillenbrand. I'm Terry Gross.